Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Thursday, May 30th. I'm Peter Biello. On today's episode, the state will be doing an audit of its recent primary election. An indicted state senator wants the charges dismissed, and author Stephen Hundley tells us about his new coming-of-age novel set on a Georgia barrier island. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. The Georgia Secretary of State's office is auditing randomly selected batches of ballots from the recent primary election. GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
The secretary's office used dice rolled by people who attended the event to decide which batches of ballots each county would have to audit. The race that's being audited is the statewide nonpartisan Supreme Court seat. A law passed in the most recent legislative session requires an audit of the top statewide race each election. Secretary of State Chief Operating Officer Gabriel Sterling says the audit could help improve trust in elections.
The audit confirms the outcome, essentially. It's not intended to repeat or recreate the election again. It just mathematically shows that the machinery counted the ballots properly.
Sterling says that all counties must participate in the audit and that the process and final results will be open to the public. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Atlanta.
A new state law gives Georgians recovering from addiction more options for treatment by clarifying zoning laws. HB 1073 removes the state code requiring recovery residences to wait longer for zoning approval. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
Local requests to rezone properties in Georgia typically take between 15 and 45 days under the state code. But until this year, that wasn't true for all properties. Brent Moore is the founder of Redeemed Living in Valdosta.
But anything rehab, drug, and alcohol related has to go through a maximum nine month, waiting period from the time of the first meeting. And so that was the loophole the neighbors found.
Moore says their campus is finally open more than a year after its first of three votes for zoning approval. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
A state senator indicted in Georgia's 2020 election interference case is asking a state judge to dismiss the charges against him. Norcross Republican Sean Still is among 19 defendants, including former President Donald Trump, charged in the sprawling case. At a hearing yesterday, Still's attorney, Tom Beaver, argued Still should not face criminal charges for his role in the meeting of the Republican false electors nearly 4 years ago.
I must say I've never seen a fraud perpetrated wide open in front of the public with a court reporter present, with a videographer present, with the media present, in broad daylight in front of 15 other people.
Prosecutors argued that the meeting was part of a larger conspiracy to overturn the popular vote in Georgia. Judge Scott McAfee has not issued a ruling on the motion. Korean automaker Kia has begun production of its first American-made electric vehicles at its factory in West Point. U.S. Senator John Ossoff joined company officials in celebrating the milestone there today. Kia announced in July of last year that it would invest $200 million in its West Point facility to produce its EV9 SUV. Producing in the U.S. will allow the vehicle to qualify for federal tax credits to lower its cost to consumers. Officials in Augusta yesterday celebrated the reopening of one of the city's most popular entertainment venues. The Bell Auditorium has been closed since June of last year for a $17 million renovation and expansion. Cedric Johnson of the Augusta-Richmond County Coliseum Authority says most everything inside the venue, from its grand entry hall to its bathrooms, has been refurbished. And there's also a new speakeasy and club. It's all part of a larger entertainment complex aimed at bringing more visitors downtown.
In fact, this is considered phase one of the larger project, which will be a 10,500-seat arena, brand new, that will be the pride of Augusta, I think.
The project is funded by a voter-approved special purpose local option sales tax. The first performance at the renovated Bell Auditorium will be piano rocker Ben Folds on Friday. Middle Georgia State University is partnering with the Metro Atlanta School System to give high school students interested in aviation a jumpstart on their education. 11th and 12th graders at the Fayette County Public School Center of Innovation can take the prerequisite courses for the flight program at Middle Georgia State University in Macon and Eastman. The dean of the university's School of Aviation, Aiden Clark, says the courses allow students to explore the industry before committing to a career path.
So maybe you have somebody that's thinking about aviation, but not 100% sure. It may be a way for them to kind of dip their toe in the water and see if it's something that they're really interested in without having to make a drastic move.
Middle Georgia State University has similar partnerships with three other school systems. Clark says he hopes the partnerships show students the different opportunities available to them within aviation, from air traffic control to airport management. The teenage years can be an incredibly emotional time. The urge to push boundaries and explore the larger world can be overwhelming. Now, imagine you're a teenager with all those feelings, living in the wilderness of a Georgia barrier island. That's the premise of the new novel by Stephen Hundley. It's called Bomb Island, and in it, a teenager named Fish lives as the adopted son of island dwellers, who make their living running boat tours of the site where a nuclear bomb was accidentally dropped into the ocean. It's a story of growing up, finding your own way, and surviving unusual and sometimes dangerous conditions. Stephen Hundley joins me now. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about the main character, Fish, this 15-year-old boy, a lot of rage inside him. What's the inspiration for Fish?
The inspiration for Fish, I think it was maybe David Joy who said that most characters start, you know, as a reflection of the author, but I think the magic of the novel is over the long course of the time that you spend with those characters, they develop into something more. Mm-hmm. And it really does feel miraculous.
Mm-hmm. So what was the starting point and how did you see him develop?
I wanted someone that was going to be at a crux point. I think that is what you're trying to leverage with a coming of age, someone that has a lot of life ahead of them, a lot of choices to make, and a lot of forces pulling them one way or another. With Fish in particular, his chosen family, some of them respond to violence with violence, and some respond to violence and aggression with sort of a measured passivity, and Fish has to decide how he's going to handle it.
So Fish, when we start this book, he's living on Bomb Island.
Yes.
And his mother figure, if you will, is Whistle. And Whistle, long before the start of the action of the novel, brought him to Bomb Island. And he kind of learns from her. She's a peacenik in a lot of ways and spreads love wherever she can and lets him sort of spread his wings to the extent that he can on a very small island. And it seems to me that at the beginning of the novel, he's really pushing up against the boundaries of this small place and the rules that he doesn't quite buy into that Whistle sort of imposes on him.
Yeah. You know, he was raised by rebellious types. And even when you're raised by rebellious types, there's still the force to push against. So that's definitely the case for Fish. And I think a barrier island was such a great location for a coming of age because you have to go out. You have to push the boundaries. The island is very small. It's only 3 miles by a mile and a half. So by his very, you know, morning walks, he's pushing the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great metaphor for being that age in general. You don't have to be on a literal island to feel like your parents have created something of an island around you.
Yeah, for sure.
The action of the novel has to do with forces off the island, again, another metaphor, and Fish's desire somewhat to get close to Celia.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about this budding adolescent relationship?
The book is not built as a romance, and Fish is young enough that I wanted his exchange with Celia to really be an artist's relationship. I wanted them to...
Tattoos in this case.
Tattoos and illustration for Fish. He's sort of like a neophyte to the tattoo world. The first tattoos he sees are on Celia, and they've all been done with ballpoint pens. So that's his starting point. But I wanted the exchange of art and the appreciation of art to be what grounded and connected him and Celia. And later in the book, you'll see they get to meet each other again in early adulthood. But most of the book deals with that adolescent meeting and just the exchange and the appreciation of a really cool piece of tiger art that he sloppily pins into the back of Celia.
Also should mention that all the names are kind of unusual.
Yes.
In this book, kind of representative of the unusual family structure. There's a guy named Reef. And then there's Whistle, of course, and then the main character we know is Fish, and we don't know him any other way, just Fish, F-I-S-H.
Yeah.
Just worth mentioning that. There is a tiger on this island. Tiger shouldn't be there. The tiger's name is Sugar. And the tiger introduces an element of danger because Fish and his chosen family, they don't live like in standard houses. They live like in tree houses. They live very close to nature, and they're kind of at the mercy of this tiger. If the tiger wanted to be meaner, it could be. Tell us about the inspiration for putting a tiger on this island.
Well, first off, I should say that Sugar's an Atlanta native.
Really?
Well, yeah, he comes from a garage in Atlanta. It's a little outside of the frame of the novel, but all the characters come from Atlanta and move to the island in a sort of escape. With the tiger, I started as a short story writer. I have a lot of love for that form. And in short story, we work a lot with chronic tension and acute tension. So whereas the atomic bomb is sort of the chronic tension and is baked into the psyche and the dreams and the mythos of the place and the characters, Sugar is the acute tension. He's the bomb that's exploding now. Mm-hmm. So he functioned in that way to put an edge and really pressure the narrative. I think my strategy with Sugar, with the bomb, with the violence coming from the mainland was to immerse my characters in a place that I personally wanted to spend a lot of time into and just begin to turn up the pressure until the narrative and the action became inevitable.
Mm-hmm. The bomb is not, I would say, as big a presence as we're led to believe by the title of the book. As you mentioned, it's there. It's unexploded. I didn't have the sense as a reader that it was even really a threat. Just kind of the thing that gets people interested in this place.
Yes. Yeah, one thing I like to do in this book is talk about the ways that the South commodifies, commercializes, and advertises their disasters, their oddities. You know, in Kansas, you'll drive out to see the largest ball of twine. Here in fictitious South Georgia, you'll see on the highway billboards that say, touch death and brush eternity and that kind of thing. So the bomb comes from a real bomb off Tybee, which is Savannah's Beach, and I do not believe they market it in the same way. But here in the world of fiction, the town can fully embrace it. And you're right, yeah, it's not a pressing danger. More of like providing an atmosphere of mystery and hazard and sort of this Bermuda Triangle effect I wanted to produce. Growing up around these barrier islands like I did, you got the feeling that things collected there and anything was possible there. And there was a myth of purity around them. Of course, they've all been clear-cut 2-3 times over the hundreds of years. But still, that mythos of possibility where anything could appear.
The real-life bomb off Tybee, is that an atomic bomb?
I believe so, yes.
And did it arrive there in the same way, with planes sort of colliding and then dropping it?
A simulated bombing run and a simulated fighter escort, I believe, collided and they jettisoned it.
I don't want to give away the ending of the book. Readers should make their way to the end. It's great. But I will say that Fish spends some time on the island without his chosen family and makes some decisions about the rest of his life. I'm wondering how you felt about leaving Fish where you left him at the end.
I wanted to leave Fish in a place of possibility. And I think whenever you deal with a character in literary fiction, there's an expectation for growth. And I think that this story had to push Fish in one direction or another. And like you say, I'll leave it to the reader to see which way he goes. But I was hopeful. Like I say, you start the character knowing them, and through the course of the novel, they surprise you. And I'm very hopeful for Fish and what comes next for him.
The book is Bomb Island, Stephen Hundley. Thank you so much for speaking with me about it.
Thank you, Peter.
In sports, Atlanta United snapped a 9-game winless streak to top Inter Miami 3-1 on the road last night. Atlanta United's last win in MLS play was against Chicago on March 31st. In baseball, the Braves face the Nationals at home again tonight. This comes after a 7-2 loss last night. Ronaldo Lopez is scheduled to get the start for the Braves. The Atlanta Dream beat the Washington Mystics 73-67 last night. Alicia Gray led the Dream with 19 points. And Atlanta's newest women's professional indoor volleyball team, the Atlanta Vibe, finished its inaugural season this month with an average of 3,200 fans per game at Gas South Arena. The league has released its overall attendance and viewership numbers, boasting 400,000 fans and nearly 4 million viewers streaming matches on YouTube nationwide. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit gpb.org/news. And if you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, take a moment, do it now. We'll be back in your podcast feed tomorrow with all the latest news from Georgia. And as always, if you have feedback or a story idea, we want to hear from you. Email us. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.